What did you children come here for? Look, you won't get everything, but you'll get something. Stop with this fairness crap and make some compromises. Then go home to your friends and your goofy costumes and brag about how much you got them. Or you can go back and go, oh, we didn't get everything we wanted, so we got nothing because we're big babies. What's it gonna be? Fine. OSI, are you gonna play nice and actually get this stupid thing signed?
Alright, I guess.
Good. Now look over my changes and sign it. It's as fair as it'll get. And trust me, it's way better than my dad's version.
So begins the signing of the new Treaty of Tolerance.
I swear I will practice more if we ever do this again.
Hi! Hi! Welcome to Venture Bros, Venture Bros Podcast. I'm your host, always Brian Dressel. With me, as always, is Graham, Helper Mod 2, Mason.
Hello! I'm Helper Mod 2.
You can do a Reese Darby?
I can't.
But his voice is so easy to emulate. Look at me doing it right now.
Correct. You must be Dr. Venture's son. I've heard so much about you.
Just in case you're unaware that I just cut in a clip of Reese Darby, that was not me. I'd love to take credit for the short little audio bit that I just had of Reese Darby playing there, but you know, nope, that was just him. I'm ashamed. We also have Matt, Corporal Snoopy Dykes.
Corporal Snoopy? Owner of a Toyota Camry.
Oh boy.
Beautiful Pearl or something.
Seriously, I wanted to actually pick names from this week's episode for I don't know what reason. It's mostly the main reason had to be just because I wanted to call somebody Corporal Snoopy.
Well, I'm honored that you chose me.
I mean, you should be. Corporal Snoopy is one of the best names they've come up with in this entire show, which is saying something. But here we are this week talking about the Immorata Consequence. Do I have that right?
Yeah.
Inamorata?
I mean, that's how it's spelled.
Inagata Davida?
No.
Something
that's
like
wrong?
That.
Yeah, it's the I-Consequence. Yeah. I like this one. What do you guys think?
I like it as well.
Weirdly enough, I used to really... Well, not used to, because I still think it's a good episode, but when I was watching through this last time, I was quite kind of lukewarm on it, to be honest.
Really?
Yeah, it was really strange, because I remember when I got to it, I thought, oh, yeah, this is a great episode. And as I was like watching more of it, I don't know if it's I was just really looking forward to next week's episode or what, but I was very kind of lukewarm to it.
That's interesting.
Yeah. I mean,
do a really quick breakdown of what the episode is, and then we can dive into why you're kind of lukewarm on it. Because I find that this isn't my favorite. I don't think it'll break my top five, but I think it's a solid episode. I think all of season 7 is so solid that if this is the worst of the bunch, it's still better than some of the other episodes in older seasons. So
I'm sort of feeling. That's exactly how I feel.
Well, then we'll get into it in a moment. So really quick, just in case you haven't seen it, this episode picks up where the Guild of Calamitous Intent and OSI are going to renegotiate their contract, essentially, of how they're able to aggress each other. And while that's going on and going okay, Rusty actually has to put on his big boy pants and does a pretty good job with it. It goes fine. They have pretty disagreeing things on like what a level 5 deserves and yada, yada, yada. While all that's going on, Hank bumps into old buddy Dermot, and they go out and peep on some problems and a guy with his belt covered in pee-pee. How gross is that? And Dean goes to visit his buddy out in the cabin who told him that he's a clone to find he's no longer there, but he left his helper Mod 2 there, voiced by Reese Darby, who then is like, oh, I shouldn't be the one to tell you this news. He's like, oh, I know I'm a clone. He's like, oh, okay, good. And then they kind of have this like conversation and they get along, and Dean's like, come enjoy life, and he's like, fuck off, I want to stay in my cabin where it's safe. And then at the very end of it, he's like, alright, so bye, Rusty. He's like, What? Rusty is also a clone. And then he kind of forgives his dad in a way of for being a shitty dad, because the only dad worse than Rusty was Jonas Venture Sr. And that's pretty much all of it, right?
Yeah.
Did I miss any other major... Oh, the other thing is his belt was not covered in pee-pee, as in urine. It had the initials PP on there. He is an undercover agent from the Peril Partnership of Canada. Dun, dun, dun!
No!
No!
Which we don't fully find
now
out.
Now I've gotten everything.
After credits. Which is cool.
Yeah?
Yeah. Yeah, which is one of those ones where, like, even Chewie, when she was rewatching with me, she's like, what is the PP on his belt? I remember it's not just, like, he's got piss on his belt. I'm like, oh, no, Peril Partnerships. Oh, yeah.
We have a mole.
Okay, so if that's the breakdown and everything, let's jump back into why Matt isn't as big of a fan of this episode. Because I think Graham and I are more on the same page of, yeah, it's really good. And then Matt is kind of a little, meh.
I don't know what it is. I've
riveting
it.
Stuff. Thanks, Matt.
No, it's weird. It's like I've watched it a couple of times in preparation. And both times I was watching going, yeah, this is an alright episode. But it never really caught me. I think maybe it's the whole thing is going towards that twist ending type thing of it's, you know, Helper version 2 or whatever it is called. Mod 2, thank you. Thinks that he's talking to Rusty. And I think once you know that, I don't know. It just... I'm not saying it's a bad episode anyway. It does have some really good moments in, like, Hunter's stuff's incredible. Rusty's speech at the end is fantastic. It's just...
Oh, yeah.
As a whole, I just think... I don't know. I was just sort of like... the first time I was watching it, I distinctly remember thinking, is it nearly done now or something like that? Which is weird for me, because I never think that about Venture Brothers ever. And I never really thought about it. I didn't think it the second time either, which is odd.
I always forget about the Rusty part, though.
I do too, because they don't really do much else with it.
Yeah, they just kind of drop it, and you're like, wait, what? And then, yeah, move on.
So here's the thing, and just I'm just taking a stab at this, Matt, because I'm not sure if, I don't think you were on very often when we were covering it. I want to say it was season 3 that we had this complaint, or maybe it was 4. And it wasn't necessarily a complaint, because the episode's still good, but we get so used to these Venture Brother episodes being very good, standalone, enjoyable episodes, which is great. But every now and then an episode comes along that kind of has to move the ball down the line a little bit. Like, it kind of has to just take everything and be as entertaining as it can while still setting stuff up. And since that's so rare in this show, it kind of catches us off guard. And this episode has a ton of that. A ton of... just hints and things for later in the show.
I think that's maybe what it is. It's like a... It's a bit of a...
Yeah, it's like a filler, like a transition episode.
Yeah. I'm trying to think of the actual word, though. Exposition. It's like an exposition dump.
Yeah, you know? I can see... As soon as you know all of that stuff, I could see it being a little bit less engaging, and maybe that's why you liked it so much the first time and not so much on repeated viewings.
Yeah,
maybe?
I mean, even like the second or third times I watched it, because I've watched these series God knows how many times, I enjoyed it. I mean, when we first started this, I remember saying that there's not one episode of season 7 that I don't like at all. I think they're all fantastic. And then I got to this one this time, and I thought, this one's not that good. I mean, it's still good. It's still a good episode, but it's not as good as the rest. It's sort of like, it seems like a, you know, like a... the one sort of average episode in the series. I mean, average when it comes to Venture Brothers, which, you know, average Venture Brothers is better than most TV series.
So if you're going over the span of all 7 seasons, I could see it being middle of the pack somewhere. But I don't see it ever being... Like, it's not as bad as some of the low points in the show. Like, it's definitely nowhere near, not even in the same ballpark as, like, Secrets of Turtle Bay, or even some of the somewhat lesser episodes. But for the most part, like, I think as far as season 7 goes, it'd be one of the later, definitely the latter half. But I don't, even knowing that, I think maybe it's like we've said, I think a few times in this episode already, season 7's so strong that even the worst of it is still pretty damn good.
Yeah. And that's what, because I'm not saying it's a bad episode. I'm not saying it's bad. I'm just saying it's not as good as the other ones.
But why do you hate it?
Why do you hate it so much, Matt? No, but here's my thing. The one major, not major complaint, because I don't have really a complaint with the episode. I think the thing that left me wanting the most, that makes sense, is Dermot.
Yeah.
I love Dermot. He is such an annoying fucking idiot of a person, but I love his character so much. And to see him actually grow up a little bit and take a job where he actually has to fight people like he's been saying he can his whole career or his whole life, like seeing him actually finally put his money where his mouth is a little bit, I think is so interesting. And then they don't really do anything with it.
Yeah, it's like, it's the whole Dermot thing. It's almost like, oh, we'll just throw him in just to move that part of the story along.
Yeah, it's kind of like, well, if we're going to go back to the compound, that's really the only way we can see Dermot again. Because Dermot's not coming to New York. There'd be no reason for him to, unless, like, Rusty were to take him in. And Rusty's never going to do that.
Nope.
So I think that's the only reason he's there, because, and the only reason he's there and in the OSI is so they can kind of keep him around a little bit, because without being at the compound anymore, there's really no way for him to fit in.
Mm. Yeah.
And I think they're smart to do that, because I love Dermot, and I think keeping him around in any way, shape, or form is the right call. I just kind of wish they'd done something more with him. Like, maybe he's, like, less of an idiot. Maybe he somehow got smarter than Hank, and Hank drags him down to his level. Like, just something kind of like that. Would have been kind of cool, but this episode's so bloated with, just as Matt said earlier, exposition. I just don't think they really had the time to go too deep into any other area.
It's just odd they bring Dermot back just for that one episode where they could have, now they're under the establishes in the OSI, they could have had him come back in a later episode.
I mean, they still can. I mean, he can be in season 8, he could be anywhere now.
I mean, like in season 7, though, just to have him just like come up in one episode in season 7. And then just disappear again. It just seems a bit odd.
Yeah, I mean, they definitely reestablished him to where they can bring him back at any moment. But it does seem like, why now? And what is really the purpose in this? Other than to just kind of move Hank into this place to see the PP thing.
Yeah.
And then have that be a larger arc over the next couple episodes.
Pretty much the rest of the season, Para Partnership has a hand in something or another. Like, even if it's not the main point of the episode, it's brought up the rest of the season.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, more directly in front of the next, this episode and the next episode, but throughout the rest of the season. To where it's like, did they really need to do the whole Dermot to OSI to Hank to all that stuff to do that? I don't know.
Like, but no, but at the same time, if they want to keep Dermot around, it's a good way to kind of squeeze him in there and make it work. So I'm kind of okay with it. At the same time, it's kind of a complaint.
Yeah.
What do we think about Dean and that whole
conversation, I love it.
I guess, is what we'll call it.
It is the best part of the episode,
I love Rhys Darby.
If you don't live Rhys Darby, get the fuck out of here. I don't know where you are right now, but wherever you are, get out of it or there.
I think there's one person in the world who doesn't like Rhys Darby.
Well, fuck that person.
Yeah.
They're an asshole.
And they're currently getting out of wherever they are now.
Yeah. Their own house.
So weird that the one person who hates Rhys Darby also listens to our show, but, you know.
Yeah.
Glad to know you fuck used you. To be amongst our listeners.
Yeah. He's now got out of his own home because he's now homeless.
Standing outside his house going, why the fuck did I actually listen to that podcast?
And then he got run over by a truck.
Especially that episode with fucking Rhys Darby.
I knew I hated that guy. But I love the Rhys Darby robot. I think he's just great. I love his attitude. I love the whole story about Helper, like getting the backstory on Helper and why Helper is actually somewhat intelligent and the rest of them weren't.
Yeah.
I love the reference to skins. The UK, right? So this is really strange. Like this TV series was like when I was in like sort of high school, sixth form-ish area, which you know, like 16 to 18 is sixth form.
Okay.
I think that's when the first series came out, and there were so many people going, "Oh, yeah, Skins is just like my life." I'm like, "Fucking bullshit! Your life is like the in between. It's like mine." That sequence is so good, though, because it's like he asks so many questions multiple times, and Dean is like struggling to keep up with answering them. So he's like, he's answering like one of the questions, then gets asked another question, then answering the previous one. And I just love that whole thing of like just the sheer confusion with Dean.
Oh, especially the sweatpants has to be the best.
Yeah,
one.
The sweatpants.
Warm them up to a few more degrees than your body temperature, and it's a real treat.
And you know what? Whenever I hear that, I think to myself, I really want to do that.
Yeah, I do too. Like, it does sound like a nice treat.
Yeah.
And the other thing, he takes him up on it. It's at the end of the episode with Rusty. Why are you wearing sweatpants?
See, it's not a bad episode. It's got some great moments in it.
The one who's saying it's a bad episode. Trying to convince you.
I said I was lukewarm to it.
We get it. It's your least favorite episode of the whole series. You don't need to keep hitting it so hard.
Give me that stick.
What do you guys think of the twist, though? Like, because it doesn't really come back up throughout the rest of the series, right? Do you think that's like a twist to reveal something later, or is
it
just
if it's
like
set up? I sort of see it as some sort of set up for season 8, maybe.
Because I was gonna say, like, what, like that twist, like the Rusty twist, or the pee-pee twist? Twist really isn't really a twist, I guess. It's more.
No, that's just more of a reveal. Whereas, like, the Rusty being a clone is definitely like a what?
Well, it's quite funny how back in the first season, when he goes to Brisbyland and he's trying to get the clone research, and it's his father's clone research that he's after, not Rusty's. And Rusty seems a bit more relaxed. And he's like, "Oh, my father's work." But then it's almost like, I know it's not, but you could almost see that it's been set up that Rusty's a clone back then.
I could see that. Like, if you dig back into it, I could easily see that being there. I'm just not sure if it's like a happy coincidence or if it's been the plan the whole time.
I think it's one of those situations where like, oh, we mentioned clone research, but yeah, let's make up a clone.
I mean, it makes sense. I mean, it definitely makes sense with both of them. The only problem is that we've said many times on this show how the one great thing that Rusty is good at is cloning, because he did that primarily on his own without his father's help, and that kind of negates all of those compliments we threw at Rusty, which is also very Rusty.
Not necessarily, though, because he still did it on his own. There's no real mention of him working with his father on cloning.
But if his dad had already cracked the nut, if you will, on cloning, then he didn't really have to do much on his own. He just had to follow his dad's notes.
But going
Which
back
is
to that
still
Brisbyland
that he
one,
wouldn't
he
have
doesn't
ever
really.
Done.
Yeah.
Sorry, going back to that Brisbyland one, he doesn't really. Sort of like, he says, "Oh, I think there's some of his notes lying around." If he had used his father's work to make the boys, I think he would have had a different reaction than that. I know it's a strenuous sort of like.
I can see
there.
It either way. Like I can
I
see.
Do,
it.
I think that they. Think they separately cracked cloning. I think it was
maybe
like the cloning thing that Jonas did was his deepest held secret, which he kept from everybody, including Rusty. So like Rusty would have never really seen detailed notes on how to do it.
Yeah, I guess. I don't really know. And I'm not sure it's a question we really need answered. It's just one of those, like, I really liked that about him. And if it's gone, it's kind of a bummer, but it's also not the end of the world.
Mm.
But we should probably move into the crux of the episode of the negotiations and the wonderful horn that poor, is it Watch or Ward? I don't remember which one. Just forgot to practice or just probably never even thought about practicing.
And he swear he will practice more if they ever do it again.
He's right on the money with his job, though. Like he is right on time, just with a horrible horn sound.
You're pissing on my leg and telling me it's raining.
Oh my! That whole sequence is just fantastic.
You're kicking me in the balls and telling me my undies are too tight.
You're shoving your hand at my ass and telling me I'm Kermit the Frog.
You're throwing up in my hair and telling me it's shampoo.
And I love that all of that comes out of they only want one OSI agent for a, what is it, level 5 arching?
Level 5 arching.
Yeah. Which kind of makes sense.
I don't know. I'm kind of on OSI's side. I think they need two.
I mean, in the example that they gave, it was a level 5 arching with a level 8 artillery from the OSI side. So,
yeah.
I don't
but
know.
But in the very next episode, they do the exact same shit.
Yeah.
So but, I think if that's where
they do a level 1 with level 8 weaponry.
Exactly. So that's let's worse. Be honest.
Level
1 both
with level 10. Or level 6 or something, yeah.
Yeah, it's something ridiculous. But if they're both going to ignore the rules, let's at least make sure there's enough people there to handle the situation.
But that's... Hold on. That's next episode. We'll get into that next episode.
No, but I'm talking about for this episode, for the negotiations. They're both well aware that they're both going to break the rules.
Yeah.
So why not just allow another person to be there?
Because that's part of it. That's part of breaking the rules, is making the rule for the bad guys, making the rules bad enough for the good guys. So
antagonist,
that...
please.
So that they're kind of stuck by their own rules. I don't know. I think it makes sense.
I mean, yeah, it makes sense from the Guild of Calamitous Intents point of view, but it also makes sense from OSI's. Like, yeah, it's going to escalate, so why start with one? Let's just start with two. I think OSI was right on this one. They were pissing on his leg and telling him it was raining, and all of the above.
I mean, I kind of think it's that thing of you'd rather have it and not need it than need it and not have it.
Yep.
OSI's you'd rather have two agents there and not need two agents than only have one agent and need two of them.
Yeah, but the Guild of Calamitous Intent, by only limiting them to one, is kind of an antagonist thing to do.
Exactly. That's why we should listen to OSI. Beyond all of that, I love the entirety of the negotiations. I think they're great.
Oh, the distinction between mad scientist is great.
Oh my, that's fantastic.
Mad scientist.
I love the breakdown of when there's a problem, you have to have a pool fight, but there's no pool, so they just wear a bunch of floaties and still fight each other.
Yeah. And somehow his arm gets like dislocated or something
yeah.
happens.
Yep.
He was in a sling for the rest of the episode.
Yep.
What the fuck happened?
His arm got dislocated somehow. Because Shirley like, even mentions, I'll dislocate your other arm.
Yep.
And, not you know, Shirley sure is a badass, so you can imagine that he would be able to do that.
Oh, for sure. But I think the major thing of that entire conference or negotiation or whatever we're calling it really comes down to the ending, and that's where it's just fantastic. Like, the speech from Rusty, my God, if somebody could have given that speech to our Congress.
Oh, man.
That would have been real nice.
Mm. I mean, I actually wrote that whole thing down. It's the biggest quote I've ever written down. It took me, like, 5 minutes to write the damn thing down. It's like, it's write a bit. Pause.
We definitely don't have time for you to read that.
But it's definitely great.
It is great. The whole sequence is great. It just feels like there isn't... I think maybe that's another reason why Matt's a little bit, you know, why he hates the episode so ferociously.
Worst episode I've ever
seen. Can't say
anything
to you guys.
You're not wrong.
Lukewarm on it. He hates it.
He despises it.
He wants this episode to die.
He couldn't stop spitting throughout the whole episode that we were talking about.
It's like it's like Nick with that hat. I just never seen anybody hate a hat so much.
but he hates the hat. He actually hates that hat.
Yeah, Nick actually does hate the hat though. Anyhow, what I'm saying is, as much as like this sequence is great, it definitely feels like there wasn't enough there, and that's why like the B and C stories have to carry so much. And it's not really like none of the three ever feel like a full blown plot. They all just kind of feel like all like three half episodes that make up one whole. That doesn't math make sense.
Yeah.
I know, but I think that's
why I was so lukewarm on it, because there's not one. You can't sort of look and go, okay, that's the main storyline for this episode, and then there's you got this, these things happening around it. It's all everything happening at once, and they're all about even. So there's not like one main through line.
Yeah, I mean, like, chronology is, like, the one through line. It's, like, it is just all happening at once. And I think it's, like, they're kind of using the excuse of, I can't think of it right now, but closeness of just, like, being back on the compound now. Of, like, okay, well, that means we can have the OSI there, we can have the parapartnership there, we can have Dermot there, we can have all these people there, and then have all this stuff happen at the same time in one specific place and kind of get it all out there in one exposition-filled episode.
To say that they're back on the compound, well, we see very little of it.
And that, well, it's destroyed. It was blown up. I mean, there's not much to see.
There's still bits. You can still see. You can see.
They have a hangar full
of
jackets. We see plenty of the compound.
Yeah. Wait. What's with the jackets again?
Ah. Who cares?
Okay.
Just a mountain of jackets.
Yeah. I actually think we've covered about as much as we can this episode. I think it's time to move into our favorite Venture Brothery moment of a Venture Brother show.
I just want to jump in with one last thing, because I couldn't find anywhere to sort of naturally fit this in. So I, when the newspaper things come up on the screen, when Helper Mod 2 is talking about the Great Purge and everything, you saw the newspapers come up.
Yeah.
I actually paused them and I was reading through them, and there's a couple of things which are quite funny. The first newspaper has, in the top right-hand corner, a thing that says, "Today's Think Thought, all people drink less, yet urinate more than the average teenager. Scientists say, weird, right?" The second one is like a big editorial thing, and it's basically this, the guy who wrote it's obviously on Dr. Venture's side, thinking that the robots are amazing, they're fine, it's blah, blah, blah. And that they should replace wives, essentially, and it's all the women's fault that they're so annoyed because they're worried that these robots are going to be getting the nice new coats that the husband promised them and everything like that. And it ends with this fucking incredible paragraph thing. It just says, maybe if we say our prayers at night and ask politely, the good doctor will provide us a robot that we can have sex with, because isn't that the dream we all share?
Wow.
And just the quotes from Dr. Venture in all those newspapers just show him to be such an asshole. And, like, we already know he's an asshole, but my God, it was just like, you know, even to the point where he says, oh, yes, they can burn all the robots if you want, but there'll be, that is not covered by warranty, so they won't get any money back.
Good yeah. Lord. I mean,
it's fair.
Fair.
It's fair. Yeah,
it's fair. All right, now let's move into our funniest moments of the Venture Brother-ist show-ish thing. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Right.
The brotheriest.
The favorite thing that could only happen
moments.
In Venture Brothers.
Yeah, I've given up on actually saying it correctly, and I'm just going to keep saying words till I'm done saying words, and that seemed to work out well for me last week. It's working well this week, and Ben's going to work great next week. Graham, why don't you go first?
All right. I'm going to go with the one of my favorite Rhys Darby moments when Dean's trying to sneak him out of the woods because he's a miracle. He's like, I can't do this. These woods could be crawling with religious fundamentalists ready to stone me to death because I'm not mentioned in whatever book they quote from.
That is fantastic.
And you're like, that's so layered.
Yeah.
And I just love it because never in any other show are you going to get a artificial intelligent cybernetic helper mod to... thing trying to sneak out of a clone father's house in the middle of the night. Yeah.
You're very right about that.
Yeah. It's very specific, but
yeah.
Mine has to go with, I was between two, and then one of them felt like something that could actually happen in another show, so I decided, I mean, beyond the characters, I'm like, yeah, this sort of thing can't happen, so I decided not to go with that. That was going to be the all the different like analogies of what the OSI is getting done to them, or having done to them. We already kind of mentioned it earlier. And that one I felt like that one might happen somewhere else. So if I'm going for something that doesn't happen anywhere else, it's got to be Hank's imagination of how he's going to take out the OSI and the guild agent.
What's with the afro?
Just all of it is amazing, from the ride he takes down to the rope that appears out of nowhere. Like, it's, all of it is just...
Thanks, it's woodland creatures.
Joy. Thanks, woodland creatures. It's a bunch of, like, gnomes.
Yeah. And they don't speak. They're just like,
Yeah. That's definitely my winner.
I mean, for me, it was kind of a toss-up, really, because, again, with this one, you might have it in another series. And it was where S464 says, you could kill my dog and I wouldn't feel a thing, but please don't. Bailey is a good boy. just for some reason, I love that line. But the one that I actually went with was just Rusty's speech at the end, because it's just so... It's not so much funny, but it's just...
It's like inspiring, like, in a way. Yeah,
it's
so not Rusty.
It's weirdly so un-Rusty that it makes it so good. It's like, it's those weird moments where they come along every now and again where you think, oh, that's so out of character, but in a good way. You know, like when he's actually nice to the boys two times. It really hits quite a decent note, I think. And it's, you know, just to talk about, like, you know, fairness and things like that. And yeah.
It's weird. It kind of like gives you hope in a weird way of, like, in the way he, like, reaches Dean at the end of, like, wait, I thought you missed the speech.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it's kind of a nice, it's like a sweet moment.
Yeah. All right. I think we've done it. We've talked the episode. We've covered it fairly and accurately, except for Matt, who hated it, you know, a little too much.
Indeed.
You know, that's fine.
Settled down. I just don't know why I had to scream the whole time, Matt.
Screaming was intense. I'm really glad I edited it out, because it was just like, good Lord. I don't know how he kept his voice after that screaming fit. I'm never going to understand.
Man.
Yeah, no. It's ridiculous, isn't it?
It really was.
I'm just going to fucking go with it now, because I can't remember what
I did. I had to turn my volume all the way down.
I just muted everything. I'm like, he'll be done at some point.
At points, I muted him too, but then, like, somehow his voice came through caps lock text on my computer, and it was crazy.
He really wanted us to know how mad he was and how much he just hated this episode. It was nuts.
See, in my head, I'm hearing it as the scream, the Major Tom scream from season one.
We should move into plugs. Pluggity plug plugs. Mine will be very, very brief. After the Hype is back this Thursday with our very first episode of Behind the Hype, where we are going to be spending the whole month digging into the career of Mr. Joe Dante. We've recorded our first episode already. I just need to edit it. And that is on the movie Hollywood Boulevard. If you have not seen it, I highly suggest that maybe you watch it if you feel like it. It's
selling
a movie.
It there.
Woo, it's a movie. I actually really liked it, and you probably should watch it, especially if you want to follow along with us in the episode. But if you don't plan on listening to the episode, which you should, but if you don't, it's definitely not something you need to rush out and watch right away, unlike the rest of his movies. But, you know, everyone's got to start from somewhere, and that's what we do with that show. We start with our first, and this was his first. And but the episode's good. The episode is definitely good. The movie was
a movie.
It was a movie. It was definitely a movie. I'm being way meaner to it than it deserves. It actually isn't that bad. For made on the budget it was given, and the time it was given, it's actually really good. It's just the fact that they have big action sequences, and they couldn't afford to shoot them, so just take chunks out of Roger Corman movies and just slide them in place. That is not a joke at all. That's actually what happens. There's an entire part that's just Death Race.
I think I've seen him talk about that in a documentary about Roger Corman films.
Yeah, it's a weird one, but it's definitely...
Is that the one that he did when he bet Roger Corman that he could make a film for, like, $8,000 or something like that?
It was $60,000 in 10 days.
$60,000.
Oh, God.
In 10 days.
Wow.
So, like I said, the movie's not going to be great, but look at how they made it. So, you know, you get what you get. definitely, if you're curious about it, it's definitely worth a watch. But I said it'd be quick, and I've been rambling on. So, Matt, what are you writing these days? Doctor Who?
Oh man, I can't wait.
Heat. I've actually started the research on the Heat article.
Which episode of Doctor Who is that?
It's the one where Brian Dressel dies.
I'm just so happy they named the character after me. This is the best day.
Inspired after you. It's great.
I'm just so happy.
Falls into a very slow-moving mincing device.
So Heat, when do you expect Heat to come out?
I am going to try and get all the research finished this week, so I shall write it then in probably an evening once I've done all the research, because you know that's what happens. It takes me months of researching and then writing like a big one long frame fart. I'm kidding. I've only done that once. No, I don't know. I'm hoping to get it finished and ready for proofing by this weekend.
Sounds good. So that is... Graham, I'm assuming you're not plugging anything, correct? Perfect. So thank you very much, everyone, for listening. Be sure to tune in next week when we discuss the Bellicose Proxy. I said that right?
Sure.
Close enough.
Right.
Bye.